Hey guys, welcome again to the Lila Rose Show. I'm really excited because today's episode is something that I hope will be very helpful to folks listening. This is something that's been in the news a lot lately, and I've gotten a lot of questions and feedback and ideas and comments from a lot of you, as well as seeing it coming flooding into Live Action, the pro-life organization that I'm a part of that helps to educate millions of people with the truth about abortion. And this is the huge controversy right now about life, about what is the value of human life? Is abortion okay? And all the laws that are being passed, which is wonderful, in now 6 different states, heartbeat bills in the last 6 months. And there are 9 different states that have had strong pro-life measures passed just this year. This is at the same time that other states like Illinois and New York before that and Virginia have passed or are attempting to pass extreme pro-abortion laws. So laws that would allow abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason on babies of any age. So this controversy has gripped our country. And I want to first say that I think that this is a very good thing. I think that it is long overdue for our nation to have a reckoning day on this human rights issue of abortion, that it's long overdue for us to come together and actually have that conversation of what is abortion? What is it doing to these human beings that are our future, our children in the womb? What is it really doing to women and girls, to families, to our society, to the fabric of even how we view each other and how we treat one another? And this controversy that's been long beneath the surface needs to come above the surface. It needs to be talked about. And we need to decide as a nation, will we protect human life? Do we value human life? Since 1973, as many of you know, abortion has been legalized in this country in some states, in 8 different states, basically through all 9 months. And this was the result of Roe v. Wade, a Supreme Court decision, and its companion case, Doe v. Bolton. There were 7 Supreme Court justices that decided this for the entire nation. 7 different men in the Supreme Court who decided for the entire nation that abortion would now be the law of the land. It would be considered a constitutional right. And since then, there have been over 60 million deaths, over 60 million children who have lost their lives because of abortion. This is why I've spent the last 15 years of my life since I was a teenager investing in helping grow the pro-life movement, helping educate, because I strongly believe that when people are educated, people change. People change their minds on this and they become pro-life and they become proudly pro-life. And I've seen it happen countless times. And so what I want to do today is use this episode, use the next 30 minutes to dive into some of the misinformation that has been spread around in the last 6 months. I have seen thousands of comments, and there probably have been millions at this point, from people debating and discussing abortion online. This is on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. People are having these conversations in their workplaces with friends, through text message. People are having conversations right now about abortion, and that's a good thing. So first of all, I want to do a shout out to anybody out there who has been engaging bravely in communicating the facts, the truth about abortion and about pushing back against the lies that are being told, because there is a ton of lies being told right now. A special shout out to the Live Action Ambassadors team. This is a program Live Action is growing. I think we have several hundred ambassadors. I think we have 2,000 applicants in now. And this is a program for those that are willing and ready and trained. We help train you to speak out on life. And I'll include a link to this so that you guys can join if you want. Or anybody else in any pro-life group or in anywhere in the country who's doing this, or even internationally who's doing this, thank you. Keep going. Stay strong. We need your voice. Your voice makes a huge difference. I also just want to note really quick before I dive into some of the misconceptions, misinformation, the myths that are being told, that there have been a lot of very high-profile people who have chimed in recently. You guys may have seen this. Even recently, Disney and Netflix have said that they oppose Georgia's law, heartbeat law, which would basically protect a baby once his or her heartbeat can be detected, which is about 7 weeks in utero, about 5 weeks from the moment of conception, 7 weeks from when a woman is considered she's pregnant. So this is just 21 and a half days, 3 and a half weeks or so after a child is conceived, her little heart or his heart starts to beat. And within just a few weeks after that, the fully formed heart is present, all four chambers. It's incredible how quickly a baby grows in the first trimester. A lot of you guys know or may know I'm pregnant. I'm actually 10 weeks pregnant. My baby's heart is almost completely perfectly formed and just needs to get bigger, but has almost all four chambers. It's amazing how quickly, again, in just the first trimester, that baby grows. And I heard my little one, I don't know if it's a boy or girl yet, but I heard his or her heartbeat just a few weeks ago, and it was one of the most beautiful sounds I ever heard. So I'm so proud of Georgia for doing this, but now Disney and Netflix are threatening to boycott Georgia and not do any filming because it's become a big filming spot location. They do tax credits for these companies. They've said, we're going to threaten to not film there anymore. It's so terribly ironic. You know, Disney does business with China, and China has internment camps for Muslims, and they persecute Christians, and there's a recent report about how they harvest organs from living dissident prisoners, you know, political prisoners. I mean, horrific human rights abuses. They have forced abortion in China. And meanwhile, Netflix and Disney are picking on Georgia for being pro-life. Well, proud of Georgia because they're saying we're going to keep standing for life no matter what. We're going to stand by our heartbeat bill, which is supposed to go into effect this summer. So very proud of Georgia, very proud of Alabama, very proud of many of these states, Mississippi, who are passing strong pro-life laws. The six topics I'm going to run through briefly here that I think have been the six top topics I've seen, which are areas of misinformation, people commenting or using arguments on the abortion side that I think are areas of misinformation. They include, number one, that we need abortion and that Georgia and Alabama and all these states are doing the wrong thing because the children who would be born, who are being aborted instead, these children will have terrible lives. Look at the foster care system, look at poverty. So number one, we need abortion because these babies will have a terrible life. Number two, top reason and justification I've seen for why we need abortion is because of rape and incest and how horrible of pro-lifers to not allow for abortion because what about rape and incest? The third issue that I've seen frequently is what about mother's life being in danger. You know, you're going to create harm for women and kill women. Pro-lifers want to kill women, we've heard, because the mother's life is in danger. So I'm going to respond to that. Number four, disability. The child will have serious disabilities or could even die after birth. So it should be legal to abort them beforehand. It's no problem. And then the next one is number five, safe abortion, meaning if we make abortion illegal, it will be unsafe behind the back alley and women are going to self-abort. And that's why we need to stop and we need to allow for abortion. And then the last one, number six, is men aren't allowed to speak on abortion. So shut up. No men allowed. And so I'm going to run through each of these and provide a response, some of the best responses I've seen to each of these arguments. I hope this is helpful for you guys. Live Action also has done a ton of reporting. I've been doing a lot of Instagramming about this and posting, but this is a quick run through about how we can respond to some of the biggest myths, misinformation, arguments when it comes to the controversy on abortion right now. So we're going to start with the charge that the child will have a terrible life and there are just too many kids out there in poverty and foster care system already, so we need abortion. So first of all, I would say, can you say that to any child right now? Look a child or a teenager that's in the foster care system in the eyes and say, it would have been better if you had been aborted? Because that is exactly what this argument is. This argument is it would be better for someone to die than to be adopted or to be in the foster care system or to begin their life in poverty. And not only that, it would be better for them to die, but that there's no hope for them if they do have that path. And I would just say, first of all, an apology. If someone listening is an adoptee or spent time in foster care, or maybe still is in foster care, or, you know, came from a very poor background or challenging life circumstances, I am sorry for all the hatred, effectively, that you have seen online primarily and from elitists. A lot of these people that are just looking out from their ivory tower saying how great abortion is because it will do away with these people that are not wanted. You are wanted. you have just as much value as anyone else, anybody else, no matter how privileged they are. And it is a shame when people use this argument because it is a non-argument. The reality is anybody, no matter how poor they are, no matter their life circumstances, no matter how they were conceived, has just as much value as anyone else. And our solution as a society should be to focus on improving outcomes, improving conditions for those that are struggling. And that's why I'm really proud. I'm proud of Alabama. They just banned abortion. And guess what? They just reported their best year yet for foster to adoption, to improve the foster care system so that kids who are struggling in that system are adopted into loving, stable families. They just had their highest year yet, their record year yet for the amount of adoptions. So Alabama, you're doing the right thing. And this insinuation that those in the pro-life community do not care about kids who are struggling or in poverty is one of the biggest lies ever, because we not only care, but some of the people that are the most active in the pro-life movement are the ones who are adopting, who are fostering, who are volunteering for low-income moms. There are thousands of pro-life pregnancy care centers in this country. I've been privileged to volunteer at a few of them. It would be impossible to volunteer at many of them because there's so many thousands. But they are providing care for low-income women and girls and families who are struggling, who need support for their pregnancies, as well as early childhood, to care with diapers and formula, parenting classes, all kinds of resources. It's all pro bono. It's all confidential. It's all free. Where is the media and the reports on that? Where is the media and the reports on Alabama having a record year for adoptions in the foster care system? Also, some reports say that there are 2 million couples on waiting lists and waiting to adopt, many of them infertile. But many of them are not able to adopt because, not just because of the high cost of adoptions, many of these are prepared to pay it out and shell it out, but because there aren't enough babies to adopt. There are actually not enough babies to adopt. So in the foster care system, in any given year, there's about 400,000 kids. Only about 100 of them are even available for adoption or up for adoption. And of those children, most of them are not babies. Most of them are kids, sibling groups, children with disabilities, children who are teens. So the reality is we are missing children, babies in this country because they're being aborted. So yes, we need to focus on the foster care system, improving it. We need to lower the cost for adoption. There's a lot of public policy we can work on and social change we can work on, but that work is in process. People are working on that. The problem is violence destroying a life before they're even born, because of this idea that their life is not worth it, is not a good argument. And it's not fair to all of those who have overcome incredible challenges in their life, and the reality that anybody can overcome, that there is always hope. And that is the message of the pro-life movement. So that's the first topic I've heard a lot, is what about the kids in foster care? What about, you know, we need to have abortion because of them. Another one, and I'm going to go next to it, and you probably have heard of it, is the rape and incest issue. And I want to actually read one of the comments we've seen on social media from somebody about this. So this is a comment from someone, I'm not going to say their name, but their social media pro-abortion comment. It says, "Personally, I believe the sacredness of body autonomy supersedes emotions of others, and attempting to force any rape victim to carry a fetus is cruel. There is no disputing it is fetal tissue through 12 weeks and no more alive than a brain dead person on life support longer." Okay, a few things to unpack from this social media comment. Of course, this person commenting is trying to say abortion is necessary in cases of rape and incest. They're also saying that body autonomy supersedes emotions and there's no disputing that it's just fetal tissue. It's not a human being, basically, in the first trimester. Wrong on all counts. First of all, yes, I believe in bodily autonomy. We all do in the pro-life movement. Everybody does, but only to a degree. My autonomy doesn't equal my right to do whatever I want with my body to the extent of harming someone else. A man doesn't have so much bodily autonomy that he can go and stab someone else or punch somebody else. I don't have so much bodily autonomy that I can go and use my body to commit theft and steal something or to hurt another person. And in any pregnancy, there are two bodies, a child's body, independent and unique inside of me, as well as my body. And their body is not my body, even though it is inside of me and needs me for at least the first 22 and a half weeks until maybe advanced medical technology can keep that little one alive. So I say that to say, first of all, when it comes to the issue of rape and incest, which are these horrific abuses, that there we have to consider two bodies. But let's talk that through. So first of all, you may know and have heard the statistic, it's important to note, less than 1% of all abortions happen in the cases of rape, incest, or the life health of the mother. These are statistics that have been shared even from groups that are pro-abortion groups, even when they do their analysis. So this idea that we need abortion on demand because of rape and incest is actually a false idea immediately, because the reality is it's less than 1% of all abortions. That being said, is that 1% okay? And the answer is no, and this is why. First of all, rape and incest, like I said, are horrific abuses. Actually, a lot of Live Action's work has been focused on exposing the connection between the sex trafficking industry and rapists and their abuses and abortion, because abortion facilities are a prime place for rapists and sex traffickers to take their victims. Because if there's a pregnancy that does result, and usually this happens in a situation where there's ongoing rape, where there's ongoing sexual abuse of a minor. So there's an authority figure like a stepdad or something, or there's an actual pimp who has control over a young girl and he's continuing to rape her or sell her body. And so she gets pregnant at some point. And what happens? Well, in that situation, they take her to a reproductive health clinic that doesn't ask any questions. And that is often planned parenthood. Live Action has documented this extensively. I've actually gone undercover and exposed this in abortion facilities. You can read all about it on the Live Action website. We'll also include that link. But the point here is, abortion is not a healing pathway for survivors of rape or incest. A survivor of rape or incest just had a horrific trauma inflicted upon them. Abortion is a second trauma that would be inflicted upon them. Abortion does not unrape them. It does not take away the trauma that they endured. It adds another trauma. And it takes out the penalty on an innocent third party, on that child, that girl or boy who was conceived in rape but did not have any choice about how he or she came into the world. Instead of taking out the penalty on the one who was the perpetrator, the abuser, the rapist. In the United States, it's not even legal to give the death penalty. It's against federal law to give the death penalty to a rapist. So why is it okay to give the death penalty to a child conceived in rape? Rebecca Kiesling is one of those people, beautiful woman, mother of four, a lawyer now. She founded a group called Save the One, but she was conceived in rape. And she says, should I be given the death penalty for the crimes of my father? No, Rebecca, you shouldn't be. You were innocent. And Rebecca's mother got pregnant with Rebecca after a rape, after a horrific rape that she endured the year before Roe v. Wade, so the year before abortion was legal. And she actually looked to find an abortionist because she was so overwhelmed. She was not able to. She ended up delivering Rebecca and placing her for adoption. And later on in life, she shared with Rebecca that it was actually a healing thing for her, that something beautiful and good came out of something so dark and horrible, the rape that she endured. Very few studies are done on this, but the study, some of the few that have been done, found that those who are rape and incest survivors and those that choose life, of those that are surveyed, 73% end up choosing life to begin with, even though they're often told you should have an abortion. 73% actually end up choosing life. So you actually talk to the stories of women who are and girls who do survive rape and incest. They actually, the majority of them actually decide to choose life no matter what they're being told. And that's something that they felt was important to bring something good out of such a horrible situation. Another important statistic to share here from the same study, and Live Action reports on this, I also include the link, it's the Reardon study, is that 88% of the women who aborted after having after being victims of incest or rape actually regretted their abortion and said that they felt they made the wrong choice. 88%. And keep in mind, today, survivors of rape and incest, especially when they're very young, they are told left and right to have an abortion. In fact, pro-abortion groups campaign with them and say, this is your right. This happened in Latin America recently. There was a horrific case of an 11-year-old girl who was a survivor of incest. And all these pro-abortion groups tried to get her country to legalize abortion using her as the poster child. How dare they? How dare they use her trauma to say that what she needs to heal is an abortion, more trauma, another violent act? It's simply not true. So those are some responses to that common argument you may hear, that somehow we need abortion because of rape and incest. And if you are a survivor of rape and incest, then abortion is good for you. No, it's another trauma. And it takes out that, it takes out that penalty on an innocent third party. Evil cannot come from more evil. More violence cannot create healing. It never works that way. The next comment that I see a ton, and you've probably seen, is we need to have abortion because the mother's life is in danger. You know, abortion is necessary because women are going to die if they do not have an abortion, because abortion is medically necessary. So a few things here. First of all, and I actually have a comment on this that I want to read, because I just think these comments are what we're all seeing online, right? So here's a comment. It says, this is from somebody with a funny username. He says, they certainly don't care about the health of the mother who can still get an abortion even with a ban, albeit a less safer one, or if the mother's life is in danger in childbirth. So first of all, let's start with childbirth. If a mother's life is in danger in childbirth, you don't have to kill the child. You deliver the child as quickly and as safely as you can, but you don't go in and first give the child a lethal injection to make it die in utero, or you don't chop up the child with forceps, ripping it piece from limb from torso to destroy that child. You try to deliver the child. You try to do an emergency delivery. And in some cases, you might have to induce labor early, sometimes even tragically earlier than the baby can survive outside the womb. That is not an abortion. Every abortion procedure is designed to kill the child before birth, before he or she has left his or her mother's body. That's an abortion procedure. Anything else is not an abortion procedure. And the intent of any pro-life obstetrician, gynecologist, any pro-life midwife or nurse is to try to save both, to try to care for both. That's how medicine used to be before legalized abortion. The Hippocratic Oath, which is still taken in medical schools, used to include a prohibition on any direct harm to a baby in the womb, any cause of miscarriage purposefully done by a physician. It would prohibit that. We need to go back to that day, because the reality is, directly destroying the baby, directly targeting the baby's body for destruction, is never a medical treatment. I want to use a couple examples here. First of all, an ectopic pregnancy. This is often used as justification for abortion. The reality is, removing an ectopic pregnancy, which is when the baby, in very early on in the pregnancy, finds its home, instead of in the uterus, it finds its home either in the fallopian tubes or sometimes in somewhere else in the woman's abdomen. So not where the baby belongs. And in those situations, the baby, it's almost always fatal for the baby. It's pretty much always fatal for the mother. That's a hostile environment for the baby. In that situation, what's often done, and this is not an abortion procedure, is the part of the fallopian tube where the baby is located, where the baby can't grow, which could burst and cause internal bleeding and kill the mother, is removed with the baby intact. The point there is not to kill the baby, although tragically the baby will die. The baby will die until we have better medical technology to find a way to save that baby's life, but we haven't developed it yet, maybe because we're too busy aborting everybody. But in that situation, the goal is not to kill the baby. The goal, tragically, is to protect the mother, and we'd like to be able to save the baby, but in that situation, you can't. So, at least not yet, not with the current level of technology. So that's not an abortion. That's not an abortion procedure. Another situation would be if there is a situation where the mother has preeclampsia, and she is suffering, and she's not sure if she can deliver the baby properly, and she could die. In that situation, an emergency C-section is often used. And sometimes it has to be done before the baby can survive. And in that situation, you wait as much as you can. But tragically, if you have to still try to deliver that baby, you still try to give it a chance. And incredibly, because of medical technology, the viability line when a baby can survive outside the womb with medical help is getting further and further pushed back. The latest, I believe, is 22 weeks. So basically halfway through a pregnancy, that baby can survive. International headlines recently were celebrating a baby from San Diego, this little girl who was born less than the size of an apple, and they thought she would die. And by the way, she was delivered via C-section. And the reason she was because of health complication that the mother had. But they didn't go in and try to kill the baby first, which is what an abortion procedure does. They didn't try to inject the baby with digoxin, which is basically a chemical that would give her or him cardiac arrest. They didn't rip the baby apart with forceps. No, they did a C-section and tried to let the baby live. And remarkably, this little girl was a fighter and she lived. And now there's international headlines celebrating her life. She's 5 months old and has been released from the hospital with her, and given back to her family. So point here is, abortion is not a medical treatment. And there's over 1,000 medical experts who have agreed with this in the Dublin Declaration, where they signed on and they said, this is the way it is. But because our medical community today is corrupted by abortion and the abortion industry and the money behind it and the politics behind it, doctors are now using the abortion procedure as a shortcut to avoid caring and working to protect both the mother and the baby. So abortion is not a medical treatment. All right, next one. So you probably have heard it said that we need abortions because the child will have serious disabilities. And with this one, I want to quote actually a CNN commentator who is named Allison Camerota. She's a host on CNN, and you know CNN, wonderfully pro-life network. I'm kidding. CNN is incredibly pro-abortion network. I don't know that they have any hosts on CNN, like the main channel, that are pro-life. They rarely have pro-life guests. Once in a while, they'll have someone like Rick Santorum. Thank you, Rick. I'm actually going to talk about him in a minute. I've been on CNN a handful of times. We're always available, CNN, if you ever want to have somebody with an alternate point of view. Occasionally, I get in Twitter battles with CNN hosts about the issue of abortion. They like to tweet back at me. I tweet with them. But reality is they actually don't want to have pro-life guests on their show. So Allison Camerota, a CNN host, said she's grilling the Attorney General of Indiana because he is trying to fight the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals for the right of Indiana to have a law that they passed and signed, then Governor Mike Pence signed into law. Indiana had a law that would have prohibited abortions that would be discriminatory. So abortions for the cases of the sex of the baby, if it's a girl or a boy, abortions in cases of the race of the baby, killing the baby because it's the wrong race, or abortions in the case of disability, discriminating against a baby because of their disability. So anyways, the Attorney General of Indiana is on the CNN show with Alyssa Camerota, and he's arguing with her, trying to respond to her questions about why this was a good law. And she's, of course, against the law because she loves being in support of abortion. So this is what she says. Camerota from CNN says, What I want to focus on is where Indiana had tried to block women from getting abortions if it were based on a disability. I'm just curious about that one. Why would you want a family to have a child with a severe disability? So she even calls it a child. Interesting. She said, why would you want a family to have a child with a severe disability? First of all, Alyssa Camerota, I don't think anybody wants a child to endure a severe disability. Nobody wants anybody to have a disability. But the reality is some people have disabilities. So then what? Do we kill them? Do we say that they are less than and they should be destroyed before their first breath? No, that is the most violent and extreme form of discrimination. And it is not just. When I was in high school, I had the privilege of volunteering to hang out and to take care of a little boy. I will call him Jacob because I don't want to use his real name, but this young boy who had severe cerebral palsy. So he was very intellectually developmentally challenged. And this little boy was a joy. I could tell that he was living his life to the fullest as he was able to. And it was a privilege for me to spend time with him and to hang out with him and to try to play with him. And never in a million years would I have thought, it would have been a cruel thought, that he shouldn't exist, that he didn't have dignity, that his life wasn't worth it. And I knew from his family, that their family, that it was challenging, but that they were blessed with the honor of caring for someone like Jacob. And I say that because children with disabilities, for as long as they're with us, some of them have very short lifespans. Some of them can live just as long as us. And there's varying degree of disability. Reality is everybody has some kind of disability, right? We all struggle with some imperfection that makes us less able maybe than the next person. But some, of course, have it more extreme than others. And in that situation, whether they're with us for a short time or a long time, they have value. They have the imprint of God in them, just like you and I. They have human dignity, just like you and I. And they do not deserve death because of their disability. And death is not what's compassionate. If death became what's compassionate for human suffering, then we should celebrate every suicide. If death was what was compassionate for human suffering, then we should create government programs to literally eradicate those that suffer. But it's not. Death is not what's compassionate for the suffering. Actually, what's compassionate for the suffering is to come alongside, to suffer with, to celebrate the good in that person, the innate good, to try to care, to try to identify with. The solution is never to kill. And that's here what Alyssa Camerota is saying. I mentioned Rick Santorum earlier. I'm a good acquaintances with one of his daughters, and she is no longer a Santorum, but has a different last name. But anyway, she posted recently on Facebook about this because she was so disturbed to see so many people commenting about how babies with disabilities should be killed because her little sister has a severe disability. And her name is Bella. So actually, I think the Santorums have written a book about Bella's life, and she's lived far longer than they said she would live. This beautiful little girl. I think she had her first communion recently. But Bella is like her name, beautiful. And this friend of mine, one of Rick's daughters, was just saying how she is so grateful for the life of her sister and how dare they and how heartbreaking when other people talk down about those with disabilities. One other quick thing to say here as well. Part of this argument is that, well, the baby might die soon after birth, and so therefore we should kill that baby before birth. Two things. First of all, killing that baby before birth is not in any way whatsoever, in any shape, way, shape, or form, compassionate. Killing that baby before birth, I already explained why death is not the answer, but killing that baby before birth is a violent, heinous, torturous act. I dare anybody who supports killing babies before birth who are disabled to actually look at how they are killed, to actually look at the extreme pain that these babies endure because they are literally pierced with needles, injected poisons into their heart or their brain, and they die. Sometimes it takes even up to hours for them to die. Or they're torn apart, limb from torso, piece by piece, in the most torturous death. And many of these babies are older. These babies are fully pain capable. They're old enough to survive outside the womb. So what a horrific, we don't even treat animals that way. We don't even treat dogs we put to sleep that way. And yet we're literally doing that to babies. The second thing there is, though, these children, they deserve the dignity if they're going to die. And we're all going to die. We all die at some point or another. I could die tomorrow. We all are going to die. But these babies who have a terminal illness or a terminal diagnosis, they deserve to die in the loving arms of someone who cares for them, of ideally their mother, their father. They deserve that dignity to be held, to be told that they love, even if they're just with us for a half an hour or an hour, they deserve a death that is one where they're surrounded by those that love them, not the death at the hands of an abortionist. All right, next one. You've probably heard this one. Safe abortion. We need abortions because if we don't have them, there will be back alley abortions and all these women will have them anyways and they are gonna die. All right. So first of all, comment on this that I've heard. I actually read one just before. They don't care about the mother's health because she'll still get an abortion even with the ban. Here's another one. Until a woman dies from back alley abortions, glad you're so concerned about women's health. Closing healthcare facilities won't stop abortion. It will stop safe abortions. Have at it. My body, my choice. Sit down. All right. Well, I am sitting down and I'm going to respond, although I kind of feel like standing up because I've been sitting down too long. But anyways, I'm going to respond. So first of all, the research on this is clear. There is no evidence that making abortion illegal is going to mean the same amount of abortions, but they're all in the back alley. In fact, the Washington Post, which is not a very pro-life news group, they're actually pro-abortion, just did a fact checker on the head of Planned Parenthood, Leanna Wen, saying that they would give her 4 Pinocchios, which means she's basically lying, when she said that there would be thousands of deaths after abortion is made illegal because of back alley abortions. And the Washington Post is saying there's no evidence of this. This is not what happened before Roe v. Wade. If anything, there were maybe hundreds. It's even hard to detect how many then, but it's not in the thousands. The reality is, in countries where abortion is banned, people have less abortions. The studies and the research has been done on this. Live Action has been reporting on this. In countries where abortion is almost completely banned, except for very rare cases, the abortion rate is 5%. The abortion rate in countries where abortion is legalized and where there is abortion on demand. 5%. And it makes sense because after Roe v. Wade, abortion rates skyrocketed in the United States. So the reality is, when abortion is made unavailable, when all of a sudden society changes and says, look, abortion is not a solution. If you are facing financial insecurities or your boyfriend is threatening you or you are feeling afraid, there's better options. Abortion is not the answer. And we as a society focus on those other options instead of saying, your body, your choice. Abortion is the way to go. That is the key here. The reality is very few women are going to, and this is what the research indicates, are going to the back alley. And the reality is today there are already back alleys in America. They're just legal. For example, Kermit Gosnell, you may have heard of this abortionist from Philadelphia, who's now a convicted murderer, which is very rare for an abortionist. All of them should be convicted for murder, but this one is one of the only ones. He was running basically a back alley, front alley, legal abortion facility where he had blood on the walls, unsafe standards. Women actually died in his facility because of poorly trained staff. He had babies' body parts in his refrigerator left to rot. I mean, really horrific conditions. And women died as well as, of course, babies. And he was convicted of murder because he actually killed babies after they were born alive after failed abortion attempts, which is absolutely horrific. And another thing that happens in some abortion clinics across the country. Many Planned Parenthoods have had really bad health and safety reports, even though they're legal. For example, the Planned Parenthood, that's the only remaining one in Missouri. You may have heard the news. It's going to shut down and there will be no more abortion clinics in Missouri. How terrible. How great, actually. Missouri will be safer for women and children. But Planned Parenthood, the reason that they were going to be shut down is because they failed to comply with multiple safety and health standards set by the state health department. And that included properly disposing of needles. They were double using or reusing one-time use injectables. They were not training their staff on how to deal with infection. They were not complying with health investigators when they were trying to actually interview the doctors that they used at the facility. So the reality is this idea that it's going to be back alley. Well, already abortionists are running chop shops, which are always unsafe for babies, whether they're front alley and legal or back alley and illegal. And the reality is, when the laws change, it helps change cultural opinion and it helps influence behavior. Before seatbelt laws passed, a lot of people didn't wear seatbelts. Now that seatbelt laws have passed, most people wear seatbelts. Before smoking prohibitions existed, a lot more people smoked. After smoking prohibitions existed or they were prevented in certain parts inside homes or in hospitals, less people smoke. Laws impact behavior, and they absolutely will for the better, for the sake of these children and for the sake of what's best for women, girls, and families when abortion is made illegal. All right, we've got one more to go. This one is kind of in some ways I don't know, almost one of the most ironic ones I hear. This is a comment of this one about why men aren't allowed to speak. This is from a comment on social media, from Facebook. I still don't understand how men actually think that they can impose their opinions when it comes to abortion. This has nothing to do with you, so shut up. All right, first of all, if you're a guy who's listening, thank you if you haven't shut up about abortion. Thank you if you have spoken out. We need the voice of men. All right, why? First of all, I do need to point out it's been kind of funny, maybe sad funny, if that's a thing. It's been sad funny to see how all these celebrities online, like on Twitter, and these commentators and feminists have said, men, where are you? Speak out now to defend women's rights to an abortion. And those same people might have been saying 6 months ago or a year or 6 years ago, men have no say in this discussion. No uterus, no opinion. So it's kind of ironic. Now they're saying, men, say you're pro-abortion. Because every single child that's in danger of an abortion has a father. Every single child has a father. Before birth and after. And where's that father? We need men. We need men to speak out because they are fathers. We need men to speak out because they are defenders. I think men are protectors. I think men have a tremendous role in the pro-life movement. Half of the children who are aborted are little boys. So this is not a women's issue. This is a human rights issue. This is a human issue. And we need everybody to speak up. Nobody is disqualified. Everybody's voice counts. If I just said, you know, if it was a situation like murder, if you haven't experienced murder, you're not allowed to speak out against it. I mean, obviously that's ridiculous. You'd be dead. Or if you haven't experienced X, you're not allowed to speak out against it. I mean, imagine during the time of slavery, if you don't own slaves or if you can't own a slave, you have no right to speak out against it. How ridiculous. It is our duty, I think, and our responsibility for all of us to use our voice, to use our privilege, to use the freedom and the life, the lives that we've been given to speak out. And that's why the pro-life movement is growing. And there's so many people in it. And it's so diverse. Men, women, young people, all different ages, all different backgrounds. A lot of Democrats who feel like they're completely abandoned by their party. Obviously, a ton of Republicans, independents, libertarians, people of all different faith backgrounds. A lot of people of faith, a lot of Christians and Catholics, evangelicals, but people from all different backgrounds, people who are non-religious. People are joining the movement because they see this is a human rights issue. So if you're a man and you've been told to shut up, don't listen, we need your voice. We need you to speak. All right. I hope that all of these, this run through these six things. So we just ran through the baby will have a terrible life in foster care. We talked about rape and incest. The mother's life is in danger. We talked about what about disability. We talked about safe abortions versus back alley. And then we talked about men shouldn't be allowed to speak. I hope running through this was useful. I am sure you faced some of these comments or others. Let me know if there are other ones you faced. I would love to hear. You can always email me at thoughts@lilaroseshow.com, or you can Instagram message me, direct message me online, or contact, of course, Live Action. If I'm slow to respond to you, Live Action's team, when it comes to pro-life issues, is really good and quick. But I hope it's helpful. We need everybody in this fight. This battle is not going away. The controversy and the tension that we're seeing is not a result of something new. It's a result of something old being brought to the surface. And this is an opportunity to help reshape our future so that we can change the course of this country. I firmly believe it. And I think what's happening politically in these states, even as these pro-abortion states are trying to fight back, I mean, it's this incredible battle. I think now is a time more than ever that we can together speak out. So thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider reviewing it. 5 stars always helps. Our goal is 1,000 by the middle of this month, June, to try to get this podcast to reach more people. Thanks so much for listening to The Lila Rose Show. Have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. God bless.